Welcome to a new episode of Dancing Up Talks with me, Matthias, and
Andre. Hello, hello.
Hello, Julian. He is on vacation. Yeah. And we don't know where, right?
No, he didn't tell us. He disappeared.
He didn't tell us.
No.
Yeah, we'll see if he comes back. We don't really know. And today's topic is... But,
yeah, we're going to take advantage of Julian not being here and spend the whole episode talking about AWS.
Yes, finally. As soon as you're not here, we can dig into that. And we're going to talk about reInvent 2023. Yes.
And if you don't know what reInvent is, it is an annual conference when AWS books almost all of Las Vegas. There are a lot of people coming in for it. It is expensive to go, but it's worth it. And it's actually distributed across multiple venues, so you have to travel around the city to get to the sessions. But it's big. It goes for the whole week. During the whole week, there are sessions with AWS experts, announcements, and there are a lot of events that are trying to make a reInvent recap.
Yeah.
It's just impossible to do, really. We tried to do that for the meetup, and I'm in an AWS User Group Leaders program. So actually, this year, AWS decided to support us, and they provided us with two decks for the meetups.
Ah, cool.
So there is a deck of 50 slides. There is a lot to talk.
Yeah,
and there is a summary slide, which has only 5. And we're kind of going to look at the summary slides, and we will not attempt to do reInvent recap. But what we will do is we will do reInvent highlights with what is relevant for us. So DevSecOps.
Yeah, it's a lot of things on these slides. But where do you want to start, Andre? Do you want to start in the beginning?
No, I think since we are in DevSecOps, so I suggest we start with a security-related announcement. Then we look on operations. And then we look on developers. Like, what is there for developers?
Sounds good. So from the security slide, what is the first one that you notice and
I think they all they all can be distributed between multiple groups. So the guard duty continues to evolve, and guard duty is Amazon's intrusion detection system offering. So before that, guard duty would analyze your cloud trail, your VPC flow logs, your Route 53 queries or your DNS queries, but now they are extending that, and what they now announce that they also support ECS runtime monitoring, including Fargate, which is very interesting. Like, we're using Fargate a lot.
Yeah.
Then there is also Detective and Inspector. They're similar kind of tools. So Detective allows you to automate your incident response by analyzing all possible things that are happening and trying to give you a big picture. And Inspector is more like detection of things or scanning, more passive scanning of things, such as IMIs, your ECR images. And now one of the things that they highlighting here, Amazon Inspector Agentless Vulnerability Assessment for EC2 now in preview. So that's kind of interesting. I guess they somehow can analyze your EBS volumes and see what kind of software installs there and what kind of vulnerability you could have.
I think, I'm not too sure if I'm sure, but I think you snapshot your EC2 and then analyze on that one.
Probably this is what they do, yes, exactly.
Yeah. But I mean, this package now is getting bigger and bigger. I mean, now they monitor your AWS account if somebody do something, but they also start looking at the services you run, for example, your Fargate or whatever. But yeah. with this inspector, even if you run like your own Ubuntu server that is not from Amazon's image repository, they can detect it as well and just bind them together into one,
one exactly.
single plane. So,
and another thing is that there was inspector V1, which was agent full or agent based. So you had to install agents for it to work, and they would analyze your machines. And now they did the inspector V2, which they rebuilt it completely, and now it's agentless. So it looks on your existing machines and looks in ECR images, and there are more things that it actually checks. So I would say like those baseline tools from Amazon, they're quite good, and they work out of the box. And if you don't have anything today, they are very good place to start, unless you're a big, especially like if you're a small startup, because all security tools are usually quite costly.
Yeah.
And those are very budget tools, so they will not break the bank for you.
That's cool. That's cool.
I like
the runtime, the way to start monitoring your runtimes and see what's going on and alert you on that.
So like what they announced, like you have GuardDuty, ECS runtime monitoring. Last year, they also did the same for EKS. So you could also enable EKS monitoring. It is also GuardDuty for databases now. So you could they could look into database logs to see if there is anything going on there. And now they also integrate the GuardDuty findings to Detective, so Detective can look into the findings from ECS and so on and so on. And on this slide, we also have storage. And I think like, generally everything gets faster, better, and so on and so on. So it's not as interesting. But
it's like a new phone, right? Latest
kind of
CPU, more megapixel camera, right?
But one thing that stood up is, which is important to mention, it was a big deal during reInvent, is S3 Express One Zone storage class, which gives you S3 bucket, which is local to one availability zone. So this is a drawback. It's local to one availability zone, and then your typical bucket would be available across multiple availability zones. So with a one zone, you what you get back as a benefit of this limitation is getting throughput. So you could write a lot very quickly, and you can read a lot very quickly from the zone, and. Yeah. In my understanding, the biggest use case for that, the probably driving this feature, I mean, you might be thinking, like, why on earth I would choose very, like, more limiting solution compared to the general purpose S3 bucket. So the big use case for this is serverless analytics. So if you have a lot of data stored in S3, and then if you use things like Redshift serverless or Athena to go over all those logs, your ETL process will go way faster.
Yeah.
And also you can write much more. So that's kind of the biggest benefit and use case for that. If this is something that is the bottleneck for you today, take a look at this, because I know the companies where it's a bottleneck. And another thing that kind of interesting and might be useful for geeks is there is now a mount point for S3. So like if you like, you can mount S3 as a
I like that one. You can mount it inside your Kubernetes cluster.
Yes.
So I will try it. For example, I have big data nodes for Elasticsearch, and they had this extra subscription when they store snapshot to S3, right? But let's see if you can mount the S3 bucket directly into like a cold Elasticsearch or a data node and use that one as storage. That would be amazing.
So right.
That would be great stuff. Yeah.
That was mostly security. not much. It was Elsa updates to Security Hub, but it feels like not everyone is using Security Hub, since in most cases you would have your compliance tool, compliance posture management tool doing the checks, or you would have your same or something bigger. So I think Security Hub is a baseline solution, but they're trying to make it easier to use it. So there are different customizations for it. For cloud operations, we're looking at the cloud operations right now. There are a couple of things that stand out is AWS Control Tower, which is Amazon solution for governance at scale. So if you have your AWS organization, you have many accounts, and you want to, for instance, provision the baseline across all those accounts or do other operations that require, that would be harder otherwise. So now they actually have more operations that you can do using API. Initial versions of Cloud Tower were very opinionated, and you cannot couldn't configure much. Now they do change a lot in the Control Tower, allowing you to opt into certain configs, opt out of certain configs. But Control Tower is very useful. And another one that I kind of now just waiting for the Terraform to support is AWS Config. You have now possibility to configure how often AWS Config records.
Okay.
And AWS Config is a service that records the state of all your resources and how they change. Yes. For instance, Security Hub builds on top of Config. And if you have a lot of resources, like, yeah, nice. Or like, for instance, you could have quite a big config bill, because config records every single resource. The more resources you have, the higher your bill.
But if you have
a dynamic environment, then the situation is even worse. So, for instance, if you have a Fargate that comes down, like using Spot or something, each time the service comes up, you're getting ENI, that's getting recorded the config. Then it goes down, goes up, and you're basically racking up your config bill, which is not ideal. So now they allow you to actually do the periodic recording. So you can send recording, not continuously, but recording every X hours something. I haven't looked in the details how it configures. It could be like a daily recording, which could be actually good enough for like environments as development, where you don't need to have continuous recording and where things change rapidly. So this is what you should be thinking about. If I have a lot of changes in my environment, then you might want to look into this.
Yeah.
And my personal issue is config. They redesigned the UI. Before that, UI was very useful, and you could see the history of the changes to the resource, but the new config UI is not as useful, honestly, like, at least for me. Right, so that was operations.
Yeah, I just looked at the CloudWatch logs, so you can have them on infrequent access, you can get them cheaper. I mean, you want to have all the logs, but I had the issue with CloudWatch that I pay for them and I don't see them that much. It's nice to get them a little bit cheaper storage, and then when I need them, I can access them. Otherwise, it just goes away. Otherwise, we always get in that, you know, do we going to save the logs or not? I'm a fan of just save them all, right?
This slide, we also have databases, which is a big thing, important for many people. And what they have is that they now have zero ETL integration for most all of the databases we have, which allows you to analyze the data without writing the ETLs, like extracting the data from the database, which is interesting, but it's all in preview. So check for yourself. There is an interesting offering, which Elsa was mentioning in one of the keynotes, is Amazon Aurora Limitless Database.
Yeah, what does it mean? Limitless.
Right. So
is that exactly what it means? It's just through.
It kind of like that. Yes. So if you have if you have your Kubernetes cluster, you could have your pods afterscaler. So horizontal pod afterscaler. So it will add more pods. As you need them. And also in Kubernetes, you have a vertical pod afterscaler, which will make your pods bigger.
Yes.
If you need them. So it's another paradigm of scaling. Aurora allows you to add additional nodes. It's a clustered solution, so you could add more nodes and scale horizontally. But that's not always desirable, or it might take time to add nodes while they come up. So the easiest way to think about Aurora limitless database is as a vertical pod of the scaler. So your database actually scales up as the load goes, and it happens seamlessly. You don't notice that as it scales up. That's quite impressive to achieve.
Right,
so that was database. There is stuff for the developer tools. On container side, they announced the EKS pod identity before.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah.
Yeah, so it's a, technically it's kind of replacement for IRSA. And IRSA stands for IAM roles for service accounts, if I'm not mistaken. And EKS pod identity, it's a second iteration of it. So it's still using the OIDC and federated access, but allows you to do it a little bit easier, assign the roles to the pod. So it becomes almost like instance profiles for G2s.
Nice. I mean, so
if you're doing the Kubernetes, that's something to check.
Yeah, it is. It's super nice to have. And if it gets easier, that's even better.
And while we are on that, there was other things that they announced, for instance, for networking and content delivery. I just switching slides here very quick. So one interesting thing that kind of might be useful is that application load balancer now supports MTLS auth.
Yeah.
So if it's something that you do, now you could maybe skip doing MTLS yourself with the parties that you integrate and use application load balancer for that. That's kind of one of the things worth mentioning. And yeah, and while we're on the containers, another thing that I kind of want to mention, and it went under radar. So that feature was initially planned to be released on reInvent. I'm not sure what happened. I had, as an AWS community builder, I had an NDA preview for that feature. So I kind of knew it's coming. But then it wasn't announced on reInvent and came after. It's an easy way to do encryption and transit for ECS using ECS Connect and private CA. So the ECS Connect got integrated with private CA, and you could almost do like one-click encryption and transit for ECS. And it was challenging for ECS before. Now they announced that, and I'm planning to take advantage of that. So that's something to put on your radar. We also have the whole slide of generative AI. Obviously, because it's,
I mean, that wasn't that one of the biggest announcement, all the AI stuff, right?
Yeah, and there were like a ton of stuff in there. Yes. It's actually, we have a slide, and then like there is another slide that goes into machine learning. And well, we will pick a few, since after all, we are not experts, but there are a few interesting things that useful. I find very useful, and one of them actually could be in cloud operations is the fact that they now have AI-powered natural language query for CloudWatch. Like for me, it's useful since I never can remember all the query languages of Elastic, CloudWatch, Grafana, Prometheus, all of that. I just cannot remember it. Now we could use something similar for the human language. So you could say, well, give me this, 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 and then it will build a query for you. That's good.
That's good.
That's same is for config. It's also in preview. Now you can query config with natural language queries. So, yes, generative AI everywhere, LLMs everywhere.
Yeah.
And they also have their own AI support, so like with Bedrock, and you can try Party Rock to learn about that. There are enhancements for Code Whisper, which is Amazon's Copilot, if you like. And that actually gives us an interesting segue into something that I think people didn't mention enough from what they announced, and I urge you to look for the demo of it. So Amazon has an offering called Code Catalysis. Something like that. And you could look at that as something like GitHub, where you could do your pull request, you can do your CI, and so on and so on. And before reInvent, it didn't really have much to show to differentiate itself from the GitHub, but now it does. So they announced Q, and if you work with Amazon or AWS, you probably already saw Amazon Q popping up on documentation pages and your console, saying, now you can ask me things. And it will answer them with different level of success. Some people were kind of critical about that. And what's interesting that they did integrate Amazon Q into Code Catalysis in a way which is very interesting. And again, I do recommend you watching the demo. But imagine this. So you have your repository, and you open an issue and say, I want to add a linter to my CI. And that, I mean, like, if you want to add a linter, you would need to go check the documentation, run a couple of trials to see if it works, and so on and so on. So it's a tedious job that always brings a ton of value, but needs to be done. And if you have Amazon Q enabled, you can assign Amazon Q to the issue, and Amazon Q will open a pull request for you with the code to look at. It might ask some questions.
Yeah.
But basically, you have a way to iterate over the code with generative AI. Before that the only kind of iteration you would have, you could type your questions to the ChatGPT or like whatever Google has nowadays, Gemini. Or you would have Copilot suggesting the pieces of code, but you would still need to work on it somehow. Here you actually have a comprehensive integration into your workflow. You have work with an outsourcing firm. You just create the pull request back.
Yeah, it's like an extra staff you can just assign tickets to that are simple, right? I need to do this.
That's amazing. Very interesting. I'm very interested to see how that's going to evolve. And another benefit here is the fact that Amazon Q could be trained on your code, but that code will not be shared for the machine learning purposes. So that's another big thing here, that you could actually have all your source code database there, and Amazon Q will be building new code based on what it learned from your code bases, while that still stays outside of the... So it's not shared with Amazon. At least this is what they say.
Well,
you have to trust them on that. One more thing here is that tools like Code Whisper, which is their way to generate the code, they're quite well trained on Amazon APIs. So if you are developing for Amazon. And if you kind of even looking at code catalysis, there is a good chance you do.
Yeah.
Then it might be superior quality code compared to other GenAIs, since it actually trained on those SDKs and trained to work with those SDKs.
That's smart. Yeah.
So that's very interesting for me. And there are like ton other generative AI announcements, but
it's a long list. Yeah.
But actually, like I attended the meetup where there is one co-organizer of the meetup who did the presentation, and that piqued my curiosity, and I thought it would be good if we bring it up here. So you guys, if you miss that somehow, and it's actually quite easy to miss, then here it is, and I. Now, clicking through slides, there are a few more things that I think I will call out between Mist and the developer tools. And one of them is AWS CloudFormation introduced the Git management of stacks, which is their way of saying like you can do the GitOps with CloudFormation.
That's kind of interesting.
Yes, so it actually makes CloudFormation somewhat useful. Though there are still a lot of limitations when it comes to CloudFormation. And there is also multi-account experiments for AWS fault injection service, which means that when it's time for you to do your disaster recovery test, you could now do the experiments that span across multiple accounts, which is a very interesting capability, and it might take you a little bit of time to think how this experience might look like, but I believe it's really good to have it.
It's a long list.
Yeah, and we mentioned like maybe 15% of everything that's here, and we most probably forgot something, but here you go. That's our take on the highlights from Amazon reInvent 2023.
But then maybe I can ask you, you're working with this so much, which of all these features are you most interesting to test, right?
Well, yeah, so there are things that are useful from the day one, right? So you see it, yes, I'm going to do that.
Yeah.
So a couple of things is, I know a customer who is interested in S3 Express Zone. It's useful if you do analytics. Then something was announced a day, I think, before reInvent, but I think it's still part of the reInvent, is resource policies for Kinesis streams, so you could share them between accounts. You can write to there from that account. Before that, people would do lambdas. That would assume roles. So that's super useful. ECS inscription is very useful. I think pod identities for people who use Kubernetes also something you would use from the day one. Maybe Aurora Limitless might be interesting, but it's like especially if you have some legacy that requires like the scaling, and you kind of make your use of database more efficient, then you can throw dollars on it in a more efficient way. and the config.
Exactly.
Yeah, so that's like the money saving for many customers.
Yeah, but when this happens, it's so many things. In your experience, do they come out of preview pretty quick and you can start using them? You see them at the event and then a couple of weeks later you can actually start using them? Or what do you think the timeline is for this?
No, basically it's public preview. It's already available. You can go.
It's already available. Cool.
So everything that is public preview, it's already available. It's possible to go and use it. Another thing that they announced yesterday, so we're recording Friday, February 23rd. Something they announced yesterday is cross-account sharing of SSM parameters. like, yes, finally. It was such pain in the back to synchronize USSM parameters across accounts. And now you could just share them. Yes, thanks you very much. That makes life so much easier.
But it must be so many of these small things that you stumble on when you have so many different accounts and maybe like larger AWS setups that they fix slowly. They're not mentioned here anything, but it just make your life so much easier.
Exactly. It's always changing, so you have to stay on top to make sure that you take the best advantage of the money you spend on AWS. And they do listen, so you should give it to them. They do listen to customers. And a lot of the features you see here, they're requested by customers. So that's why they're here. And that's why we say, like, yes, that's useful. It's better it wasn't there before, but now it's available. So perfect. Thank you for making that possible.
Yeah. I think one more thing they announced was some better service for managing your cost on AWS to better see them, how they are. I think that's always
right. So
always
they did
comes up, right?
Yeah, so they did refinements in Cost Explorer, making it possible to see breakdown of cost on a resource level. So before that, you would have a resource category like S3, and if you haven't applied the tag, then that's screwed. So now you could actually see per resource. I haven't looked at that myself, but I believe that's how it is. I might be wrong, so don't quote me on that.
I think that's always not going to be so easy to start using it. You want to use all these tools, and then this someone with the credit card that just goes up.
But of making the time to actually look into those features, but I think it's actually time worth it. Like if you spend maybe 30 minutes, 40 minutes a day just experimenting, seeing what's new, learning the new techniques, you'll evolve and you start to be more efficient. So I think it's really worth it to look at that. Well,
with that, should we end this episode of the AWS re-event 2023?
I think so, yeah. And probably we should bring some more people next time because Julian is on holiday. He's probably will be back. But it's been a while since we had guests, so we could have someone and have some fresh ideas and fresh looks, something.
Sounds good. Do you have someone in mind? Or we can sync after this. Or if you listen to this episode, give us a ping on LinkedIn or email, and then we will gladly connect.
We could discuss. Yes.
Yeah.
All right.
You have been listening to the DevSecOps podcast with Matthias, Andre, and Julian. For more podcast and notes, go to the webpage devsecops.fm. Thanks for tuning in.